coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to this segment of The Curious Realm. In this segment, we are premiering a very interesting, not just concept of philosophic thought and way of being, but also understanding yourself as an actual biological piece of technology, folks. We tell you, as many of you know, I am a rocks and minerals fiend, rocks and minerals hound. I have collected rocks and minerals since I was a kid. And the idea to me that we are all basically a base element. When you start looking at things, we are about $12 to $15 worth of combined chemicals with a consciousness. And to think that our elements not only influence us, but that we influence our elements in our body, and that influences the world around us, is an amazing concept. That is part, only a mild slice of the concept that is carbonic awareness, the philosophy and way of being that has been progenerated by our good friend. Well, I wouldn't necessarily say progenerated so much as brought to being by our good friend, Jan Asari. Welcome to the show. Yeah, how are you doing?
Very well. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate not only you coming on the show again. I had a chance to meet you at the International Remote Viewing Association conference in Charlottesville, which was incredible. And while there, we had numerous times to sit in the hallway with the vendors and chat and things like that. And I found the concept of carbonic awareness to be absolutely fascinating, because once again, we're basically a handful of chemicals, my friend.
Indeed.
And it's remarkable to know, especially now with science confirming the fact that quantum entanglement is a thing, not just a thing, but pretty much the weaving of the fabric of the universe, that more than that two particles can influence each other despite distance. Mm-hmm. And when you begin there, you can really start to understand the concept of what you're talking about with carbonic awareness, and the idea that with every exhale, we are literally influencing the world around us with our bound vibration to that carbon dioxide. So let's start breaking down this. I mean, really, I wouldn't necessarily say it's a hard concept, but it's a thick concept, because you have to understand it's kind of a tiered idea. And as long as you understand that base level of frequency and the way that your frequency influences frequencies around it, then you can step up to the idea of changing your consciousness and changing your entire being with every single breath you take. So how did you first come to this concept of thinking and way of being, y'all?
So here's how I can best answer that, Chris. You know, there's a lot of things you said, and if I were to just simply come and reduce that into a more smaller and manageable fabric. Please. And invite the listeners to come to that notion, we come to recognize that the world, the universe, is vibrations and frequencies, so we're all aware of that. And what carbon certainty does, see, we have to recognize we are creative being, all right? So everyone is trying to access creativity and express art through that creative expression. So we recognize we are creative being. We have But what we need to also recognize is that we are ceaselessly being created. And the creation is not separate from the isness that the created, such as me, experiences itself in the isness. In other words, the world around me, every atom that is interacting with me, and I'm interacting with every atom, and this is all being regenerated every time. It's not just I am created into a creation that was there and somehow time passed and I fell into it at some subsequent time. No. All of time and all of its increments and disparities come about each time we breathe, inhale. So what it comes down to is not really so much worry about the breath bringing you life, but be in tune that the exhale delivers you to a death that allows you to experience the reincarnation that you will inevitably have in the next inhale. So it's noticing that the delivering us to the death through our exhale is the real connection to the true vibrations beyond the physical limitation of the body.
Absolutely, because understanding the fact that energy is not created or destroyed, it changes form. That is a base law of thermodynamics, physics, things like that, to understand that we operate within this physical system, within the physics of the universe. So to understand that, yeah, we always are, we always will be, and we are ever present is a huge concept to get, you know.
And yes, and this we are, this notion of I am, is not separate from the full absolute consciousness itself.
Oh,
meaning
sure.
This sentiment of I am is part of that illusion and the sentiment of separation that is not there. And to be awake to that non-separation, you must receive your death. Not death in terms of the limited definition of that we were giving it normally, no. But here, death is essentially the definition of death. We are expanding it to include life. And this allowing your mind to be submissive to this notion that death is actually a good thing and that you are actually dying 8 times a minute approximately, because every time you breathe, you are having embedded with that every breath an opportunity to exhale. And with that exhale, with that opportunity to exhale, there's an opportunity to die into the experience of the isness around you, mm-hmm. as you are. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I mean, I just popped up on screen the idea that our cells are constantly dying and regenerating at different rates. So the idea that we are forever in a process of death and rebirth, y'all. Constantly.
Yeah.
Constantly.
Yes, you know, and Chris, I'm sorry but to interrupt you, but this video you just showed us, this clip showing that the cells that are dying every 7 years regenerated, under the carbonic illumination perspective, one comes to recognize that the dead cells that have shed off of my skin, that I have flushed down the toilet over the past 50 years that I've lived, those cells are actually, those dead cells are actually more responsible today for me being alive and breathing than my cells that are actually alive in my body. The reason for that, the reason that is true is because the dead cells are completely out of matrix and they are in full illumination. And because I am already in interplay with them, because they recognize their longing back to me, their emanation is actually shedding light to my existence today. So you never really get rid of your dead cells because they don't give up on you.
Well, yeah. Once again, you're entangled with them forever.
You got it. You got it.
So by all quantum entanglement, you're entangled with those dead cells forever, forever, forever. Forever. And that means that you have a chance to learn from that forever,
you
forever.
It.
You have a chance to evolve from that forever, forever. You have a chance to forgive yourself of past injuries to yourself forever and
yeah.
forever, y'all. It's a beautiful, beautiful concept that goes far beyond any idea of religious or karmic forgiveness, which I think, especially in our society right now, I mean, you're over in Dubai as we're speaking. You could not be, unless you were in Australia, you could not be further across the globe from where we are. However, the cultures are totally different. The world over there, as opposed to the world here, is different and flipped, but you're still fully connected to every one of your dead cells here, every one of your dead cells in the UK, and all of that gives you the opportunity to learn and grow.
Yes, you know, and to make it easier to find this statement to be reasonable, which is to believe that the dead cells are more responsible for you mm-hmm. today, being kindled alive and with generating electromagnetic field for your existence. You know, to accept that it is reasonable that the dead cells are more responsible, here's what we can offer. Here's how we can, what we can provide the mind. Because you see, the mind needs reason, needs logic, and we reject that if we don't really. So, but here's what we want to say. We're going to say this to allow a tool for the mind to become submissive to this notion. This we can offer as a reasonable explanation of how does it work? Why would it be? Well, here's how it is. We're talking about mystical sentiment within us, which is what consciousness allows. The extent of itself being recognized is a mystical type of effort, initiation of a seeker within us, the seeking that which is beyond the limitation, right? This notion of stepping towards your own mystical vastness, even though it's like dark, you don't even understand it, there's no word to describe what it means, yet we are all seeker of that. So how, what is it about us that gets initiated with that? Your dead cells. Your dead cells are fully emanating at full light, and they're landing on your physical limitation, bringing you wakefulness, except you're so honed down to this matrix living of I am-ness that you are not tuning in to the receivership that you are of the emanation of your own full light by virtue of cosmic momentum.
And that cosmic momentum, once again, the idea of rejecting reality, y'all. We are once again in a strange state. As a humanity, period, not just religiously, philosophically, technologically, but we are at a state of roiling and boiling of things that we have not been at as a humanity for a long, long time. Not since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. Not since, you know, the 1500s with the beginnings of technology, things like that as we know it. And before we started recording, and even when we were in Charlottesville, one of the concepts that you referred to was the fish in the sea, not understanding that, well, he's in a sea. And a prime example would be, folks, if you take a fish aquarium with a goldfish in it and drop it inside of the ocean, he has no idea he's inside of that ocean. No idea. No clue. All he can see is more water. That's it. He has no idea that there is a glass wall there. Nothing like that.
Yeah. And this exactly gives me an opportunity to bring that example into the reality of your listeners and myself and you, because see, we notice we are a creative being. We put our kids into school so they learn art and creative expression and all of that. We know, we recognize ourselves as creative being. But here's the news you must come to abide by. Here's the truth you need to come abide by. You're not just created. At the same time you're being created, all of the things that your interconnectedness are being created. So in other words, in a timelessness, you're being created and you have the potentiality to be part of that creation and be an expression of that creation at that moment. Not, oh, I got to finish school and then become a creative individual. No. That's a different story. What I'm talking about, when we are saying we are a creative being, the potential of that creation force that makes me to be into a being is part of me, which means I have the potential to be the creator.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. And to bring that to a huge religious point, one of the big parts of Kabbalah and Kabbalism is the idea that we uniquely, amongst all beings on the earth and in creation, we, humanity, were breathed life into by the Creator. Because the Creator spoke the universe into being, let there be light, and there was light. Let there be firmament. Let there be seas and land, and there was seas and land, because He spoke creation into being. We take part in that creative spirit because we have been breathed into with that spirit. So because of that are words. That is where the whole concept of manifestation, casting spells, things like that comes about from. Is the idea that we are able to literally speak things into being, and to carry that one step further into our society. I could walk up to you in a bar, y'all, punch you in the gut and laugh. You know, if we were buddies long enough, that could be a joke between us. Let me come up and say something about your mother and see if and mean it. And see if that doesn't stick with you, and not just stick with you that night, but stick with you with every single experience that we have from that point forward. Because I've said something. Exactly. Not because I've done something. I could take that action back in a heartbeat, and we could laugh about it minutes later. But that perceived slight of a thought, of words coming out of my mouth, that's a totally different story, and that impacts our relationship on a totally different level. So,
indeed, you bring in sacred writings from Christianity. I know John 101 in Christianity, for example, talking about words. It says first there was the word, and the word was with God. And the word was God, right? If you look at that, what does it mean?
That is a direct callback to, and the word came over the water, and God breathed over the waters. It is a callback to the exact beginning of Genesis, saying that this is a whole new beginning, everybody. That is what John 1:1 is supposed to be.
Yes, and if I were to look at that sacred text through carbonic illumination or carbonic virtues, which is avoiding any concepts, ideas, religiosity, to interpret that, to let it speak itself without any concept or ideology, what would the word, this sacred word of first there was the word was with God, and the word was God. What does this statement mean? Well, to me, it tells me when it says, first there was the word, well, we have to stop here and ask, what is it? What was there before the word?
It was the breath before the word came out.
Say that again.
There was the breath inside before the word came out.
Well, in this particular, if we were just looking at that and not bring Genesis in it,
even our carbonic breath.
Yes, indeed. But here's what I want to say. The utterance of a word comes before the word. Mm. So here, there's an utterance inside of this machinery called mind and the body. I want to utter, Chris, let's have a chat. All right? Now, if utterance comes and says in a different shape, it might make me the urge to say, hey, Chris, let's have a chat. Or it might say, fucking hey, Chris, let's have a chat. Or it might say, fuck, man, we should have a chat. You see, utterance creates a vibration. Before we had language, we had feelings and urgency to express.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
So that's why the scripture says, first there was the word, because the word can only come from an utterance, which can only come from a vibration emanated, created already within me. So, see, the creator, because the last thing it says, and the word was God. But see, the word was God because the utterance inside of me that about to create that expression was God.
That's right.
You see, so that's the beginning. This is how we must connect.
And the conscious decision of your thought is God.
Indeed.
Your utter participation within that system of thought, action, into manifestation is God.
Yes, indeed.
That is the nature of God.
Yes, and to make it simple for, again, some of the listeners, what does the word God mean under this context? It means you. It means me. It means us. It means this whole consciousness as an absolute that is reducing itself to an utterance, reducing itself as part of that creator, which I am created by that. It's making me as part of that creation to express its intention, which is that utterance.
That's
which
right.
Means I have to die to that expression. I cannot claim that expression to be mine. I cannot claim my true art to be mine. The artist that works with me for these art, the contemplative art that you're beautifully showing it to your audience, are expression that you can contemplate because these are expression of your heart, your listener's heart. These are not words or images we have come up with. No. We have connected to timelessness in some way. We've opened the portal of timelessness. The timelessness has imported itself into these expressions. This is why I say the objective for our existence is not to live. The objective is to die into the expression of that utterance so that when the word was God, when the statement of the sacred text says, and the last thing says, and the word was God, you will understand that your death, your dying into that experience, made you be God. And now God, what does it do? It is in the process of always reincarnating you back into its fullness because of your cosmic purposefulness.
That's right. That's right. And the idea that, and what I love is that, we've only covered the ground floor here. Yeah. This is only setting up the base for the concept.
Indeed.
I had a guy years ago who owned a YouTube type platform that was like, hey, you know, I've noticed your metrics. Like, you know, you should cut things into like 20-minute chunks because, you know. And I was like, dude, there are some topics where 30 minutes is the preamble. Like that's the thesis statement. If you can't tune in past 30 minutes, I think we may have a problem. And this is one of those examples where once again, it's not an incredibly hard concept to take in, y'all, because there are numerous, philosophies that have cropped up over the last many years that bring some of these concepts to bear. However, it is a thick concept because you have to understand yourself as the biological machine that we are, as the carbon imprint that we are, and the importance of carbon and what that plays in the environment, and to start bringing the science into this, the idea of things like carbon 14 constantly decaying in the world around us. That is one of the ways. Like, I've got a random number generator on the shelf behind me over here, and that's how the number generator works. Is it keeps randomly generating a number until it detects a piece of carbon decay in the air, and once it does, it stops randomly generating, and there's your randomly generated number. So carbon is constantly decaying in the air around us, forever and always. And some of that carbon has been decaying since the time of the dinosaurs in the air around us. Like, it still hadn't decayed, you know. It is so strong, is carbon, that when you die, your carbon is fixed. And when I say fixed, folks, I mean, like, fixed.
Indeed, fixed. Yeah.
It becomes the same way as when lava cools in water, the magnetite inside of it becomes fixed to magnetic north. So we can track the different directions that the magnetic north has shifted through lava cores by telling which way that magnetite is pointing.
Beautiful.
It's amazing, but our carbon works the exact same way. When a dinosaur died, its carbon decay started in that way. And
yes,
and we can, it's fixed at that moment, and we can tell, like, it stopped right here. We are fixed with our carbon. That is a permanent part of us. That is an integral part of us. Without carbon, we ain't here.
Exactly. And the universe, you know, depends on carbon. But, you know, again, for the mind to be submissive to this notion, to simplify it, for the mind to be able to chew on it. Go ahead.
Oh, no. And please, yeah, please simplify.
For the mind to chew on it, we must come to recognize that we're offering carbon. We're offering your listeners and those interested in carbonic illumination to simply notice the carbon that you exhale as a platform of information. The carbon itself, sort of like the table that holds your plate so you can eat, has nothing to do with the food that you're consuming.
Exactly.
And yet the table is offering you a platform that you can sit and enjoy the meal, but you're not going to eat the table. Same thing here. The carbon that gets exhaled as a carbon dioxide is a platform where every cell has embedded its healing resonance as information, light, resonance information in the carbon, because carbon is coming out. It's a mechanism to express. You see, so each of your cell are artists. They are expressing, because they're not just being created or created once and they're no longer an extension of the creator. No. They are ceaselessly functioning as though they are an expression, a direct expression of the divine. And when they find themselves responsible to embed their resonance into carbon, because carbon is like the passport agency that's going to carry that information out to the universe and say, hey, guys, I got one cell who needs a little bit more sugar. And as it comes out, then the information gets bound onto one carbon, because now the connectivity of the hexagon shape of the carbon makes the information almost flow like a water, flow into all of it, it seeps through all your inner resonance, and all of your inner resonance's connection to outer matter, every atom, suddenly as an information basis, informatically gets in one of the carbons, in every carbon hexagon that is now around you. So now that you are informatically, you have died into your expression of exhale, now you are kindled as information embedded on the carbon, And the way you're kindled is by the next palpitation, electromagnetic field that the heart produces and creates a toroid vibrating aura around you. And that aura around you activates and illuminates the full information of absolute information of the inner you, the outer you, and the inner connectedness of the inner you and the outer you to the past and all the future that is yet to come, all informatically kindled, illuminated, and is now waiting for you to receive yourself. But guess what? You can only receive yourself as good as you died into yourself. But because you didn't die fully, you can never receive your full illumination. So you know what? You will only receive the shadow of your full illumination. And you come back to notice, oh, I am, and I took another breath. And you get lost in the illusion of the matrix, not recognizing that you just died, you illuminated in a full capacity, and your interconnectedness to the was illuminated as a non-separation, and you were rekindled alive, and you went back to sleep. You failed again.
And once again, welcome back to the aquarium in the ocean.
Yes, sadly, but yes.
and that's just it. We are cyclic beings. The universe is a cyclic place, you know. But with that creative spirit, y'all, with that being one with the creator, like we were talking about, the idea that we are part of that vibration. You know, comes the idea that we consent into that system, which means that we consent into that system that keeps us down as well. We can choose to leave that system of self-oppression anytime we want.
Indeed,
we can choose to stop giving energy to that negativity.
You know, we have to hear, you're saying a very, very critical thing. And the words we use must be very delicately used because.
Yeah, sometimes I swing them like always, a hammer. I'm sorry.
Indeed. Because Chris, it's always just a matter of awakefulness, waking up. It's never about getting something, going somewhere, learning something, or choosing something. You know, all of that is part of the matrix. But to really want to be waking up to the full force of your kindled, illuminated force outside of your physical limitation, it's a waking up issue, my friend. You don't need no school for it. You don't need to be scientist. You don't need to understand anything. Because even if you were scientist, even if you did comprehend everything that is scientifically provable and you understood it, at the end of it, all of that logic and all of that knowing must be let go, because the mind must be let go. Because at the end, the mind is a limitation. The mind can never understand the thing that created it, which is what? Which is that expression that you died to in your exhale.
Yeah,
because your exhale creates the mind again every time.
Yeah, and that's just it. It is a cyclical loop of consciousness that's there. And when you explained it to me at the conference, and it is very akin to the idea of reincarnation, just with intention. It's like reincarnation with intention and with the loss of the karmic pain.
Indeed. And, you know, the image you just showed on the website, if you go back to it.
I love this image. The imagery that your artist has come up with is so uniquely moving. Yeah.
Yes, and you know, and it's almost describing what you just said, because if you look at it, in this image, you can see two things. First, you can see the head of the image, the face of the image is in around an eye. Mm-hmm. You see, it's an eye. And the eye is connected on its edges to a DNA kind of movement. This is when your third eye is opening and you're living outside of the physical limitation. And the reason it happens like that, the reason you become your fullness as I am becomes the black hole, blackness of the eyes, so to speak. It almost means you've become the vision beyond the physical limitation. You've become the vision of virtues all. Now, look at the other. There's another eye in his belly. If you look at the broader belly, the belly looks like a pi. It's a the number pi, 3.14, the circle of pi. And then there's a circle. And around that circle, there is the belly chakra, which is also the eye. It is the cosmic connection, you see. So,
well, and the idea of awareness of your breath and the idea that your breath is once again the window through which you should be seeing and interacting with the world around you.
The exhale allows you an opportunity to forget about the inhale, to forget about the breath, and simply live like that. You can live like that while you're in a matrix. Why? Because you see, the circle is an illusion. I'm going to change the course to this idea where now a shape, because see, once we become that, once we live outside of our physical limitation, we become redeemer. We redeem every existence. We redeem the shapes. Now, when we redeem the words and the vocabularies, and we come to be the redeemer of the shapes and the lines and the curves, and then you come to recognize that, my God, circle is an illusion. The yin and the yang, they were so honed on their polarity that they were so embedded in the conflict, so to speak, the separation of white, I am black, this and that. And this movement created an illusion of the circle to hold them together. See, the force of me, the polarities that holding me right now are the illusion of a shape, an elusive shape, which doesn't exist, the circle.
I'll give you that on one step further, and that's the idea that it does exist. It's just on another vibrational level. Three-dimensional objects cast a two-dimensional shadow. If this was to cast a shadow, it would be a rectangle, not a cylinder.
In the case of a circle, it would be two half circles.
It would be a sphere. A sphere casts a perfectly circular shadow. So you're talking about an object of perfect construction casting that shadow in another dimension. In a dimension that is higher than that second dimensional plane that the shadow exists in, which is the illusion of the actual object.
Indeed. But now, the notion of waking up comes with certain accessories, so to speak. So when one becomes wakeful, when one arrives at a state of existence which we call wakefulness, there comes, at least in my case, there came a recognition that the circle itself as a shape doesn't exist, and that it actually is responsible for me holding myself in an elusive matrix world. The first formation of a cell and of a sperm and an egg, creating the first level of matrix, it starts with the shape of a circle. Formation of a circle becomes embedded. But if we eliminate it, we come to recognize that circle doesn't even exist. It was just half circle for eternity, eternity. It's an illusion.
The real object. It's the shadow of it. It's an illusion of the object.
You got it.
Yeah. Exactly.
And to me, that became it really brought understanding that that the shape of a circle is only an illusion that will continue to hold me in the place of its illusion, and with the polarities, just like a yin yang yang. Waking up to that, noticing that there is no circle, allowed my mind to be submissive, to let go of its polarities. So now I'm walking in the mall, I'm walking the sidewalk, normally I would have walked about, oh, it's too hot, it's too cold, oh, this one is too ugly, or I better go, all these polarities. Now, since I don't connect with the circle, I don't hold them. They vanish. And suddenly, having been a redeemer of a circle, I have redeemed myself, my friend.
Absolutely. And the idea of illusion, once again, the fish inside of an aquarium that's in the ocean, the circle being an illusion because it's only a shadow of the third dimensional object in the higher plane. It's the same as the illusion of control over our breath, not over our exhale. Our exhale, which, as you're saying, is what connects us to the world around us, frequency-wise, vibration-wise, we have full control over. You have illusory control over your actual breathing, over your actual inhale. And I'll give you a challenge, folks. Feel free to hold your breath. That is the prime example. You have full control over how long you can hold your breath. Your body's going to tell you when you need to breathe. You will suddenly gasp for air. And because your body's like, okay, enough. You've controlled the exhale enough. I'm going to control the breath now. So when you look at the inhale, your body has control over that. That's autonomic. You have zero control over when you're breathing. The universe will decide when you stop breathing.
Indeed.
And at that point, your frequency is fixed in the universe. It's done. You no longer have control over your frequency at that point. Until that point, you have full control over the frequency that you are breathing into the universe. Every single exhale, every single exhale, you have full control and right of consent over what that vibration is.
Yes, thank you for bringing that up. And here I say hashtag immovable peace, or simply immovable peace. You see, in the post, in the website, we have a statement. Perhaps you may be able to read it. I don't have a good connection here to read it. But it's talking exactly about, I forget now what my train of thought, but
we were talking about full control over your exhale, not being able to control the breathing.
Immovable peace. You see, an immovable peace is not a peace to go to get it, attain it, achieve it. Not a peace that comes tomorrow. Not a peace that you have to have some sort of mind activity or analysis to arrive at. No. A peace that you simply abide by. Imagine you come home and you notice your partner is sleeping, right? You don't go shake him and say, oh, I'm trying to make sure you're sleeping. No. You sense it. You realize, my God, he's sleeping right there. Without any analysis, without any further inquiry, the sleep mode lets you know he's sleeping or she's sleeping. Now, the immovable peace is like that. When I say to your listeners, connect your immovable peace before you exhale, believe me, this is an opportunity to hack the human frequency. This is not a joke.
Oh, absolutely.
How do you hack it? And how do you hack it? Just learn what is a peace that invites you to abide by. Not a peace that you might define by some analysis or a peace to come tomorrow. No. Notice what that is. Notice what is that immovable peace. Notice what kind of a peace means to you, one that you simply abide by. The same way you come to a house, somebody's sleeping, you just abide by the quietness. Oh, you didn't analyze it, anything. You didn't analyze it. The same way, if you breathe out during your exhale with that quality of immovable peace, where you have let go everything. The same way, again, that person is sleeping, you don't even go around checking them for analysis. You don't need analysis. When you know what is that immovable piece, and you abide by that piece, and you breathe out, let go all of your troubles before they exhale. Don't worry about it. They're not going anywhere. Your trouble is going to come back in the inhale.
Yeah,
the
next guarantee they ain't going anywhere.
Nobody's going to pick them up, for sure. And when you breathe like that, with that quality, congratulations, you are now stepping into hacking the human frequency. You may be a man, you may be young, you may be Chinese, you may be American, it doesn't matter, man. If you are in a breath work, if you're in a breathing machine, you're a dynamism of a diamond biovehicle, as I call human frequency. Once they come out of that human frequency, you open to the diamond biofrequency that you are, a biological vehicle that carries diamond by exhaling that quality of immovable peace instead of the charcoal that you keep expressing by all the troubles of your yesterdays and anxieties of tomorrow. God damn it. I'm tired of people's breathing in people's charcoal and pollution. I want some immovable peace, friends.
Well, and the idea of abiding, I'm going to bring that up again because I love this idea of abiding, not a peace to reach, not a peace to create, because a peace to reach means get ready for disappointment. Get ready for a long road of disappointment, because you're talking about enlightenment. If you're talking about a peace to reach, you know, and that puts a pressure on it. It's not just letting it be. And more than once in this conversation, I have heard you use the term isness. Isness. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I love that term. I love that term. The idea of ness, like busyness, you know, the ness implies an action. So isness, it's literally just the action of being. That is an action and an intent to begin with. No different than love. It's like the idea of falling in love. That is a horrible idea. Love is an action. It is an intention. You choose whether or not to love. It's not an accident. You didn't trip over love in the hallway. You know?
No, not.
It's an intention. It's a vibration. Abiding is. It is. So the isness of is great. I love that term. I love the idea of the action of being.
Yes, and the isness, you know, if once you abide by a piece, once you let go, once you step in to hack the human frequency by that simple notion of the exchange of exhale to be the quality of this abiding piece, once you do that, then you can begin your awareness to the harvest, to harvesting a new quality of existence in your inhale. You know, new possibilities open. A new way of being opens. You can come to recognize the isness around you is actively causing you to be into being, because they are interrelated to you. They are mirror. They are, you know, the world is a vanity fair, and you're walking around a vanity. The world is your vanity. It's all mirror vanity showing you who you are. The isness is a vanity. And that is why we want to hack the human frequency, because it's like you have one radio and you've gotten hacked into just listening to classic music. I love it. Classic music, beautiful. Being human is amazing. I love it. It's just the most pleasurable thing you can have if you are not limiting yourself to that human frequency, even though you want to live in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's just it. We so frequently, one of the things that I've been saying over since the conference is all this stuff going on with UFOs, UAPs, even the change of term to UAP takes it outside of the box that people have defined it in for so long that some people are like, nah, that doesn't exist, because that definition exists inside of this box that we have all mutually defined. You know?
Indeed.
So when you remove it from that box, you now give it a whole new realm of thinking. You give it a whole new realm of thought when you remove it from that box. And it's the same thing that we've been saying about removing consent. Like, you can remove your consent from an oppressive system, even if it's an oppressive system of thought that you have oppressed yourself with, people, you know? And we live in a very us versus them mentality world, especially here in the West. You know, one of the things that I bring up regularly is the fact of, you can add up the numbers of World War I and World War II. We were perfectly willing to kill many more people than that right here in our own civil war, fighting each other.
Wow.
It didn't even take a foreign threat or anything like that. We killed more people right here in our civil war, brother versus brother, family versus family, neighbor versus neighbor, than we ever did in World War I and World War II combined. And that's frightening. That's frightening. That's the world that we physically live in, and the mentality that most people are checked into, y'all, is an us versus them, red versus blue. Forget about the white light in the middle. It's infrared and ultraviolet, the polar ends of the spectrum, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And trying to find time, trying to find a way to abide, to just be. And not just to just be yourself, but to allow other people to just be.
Indeed. And Chris, you know, go back, if you don't mind, that image. Please. Just so that we can show. You see the hexagon shape of the carbon as information emanating out. And what, you know, when you hack the system, so to speak, what you can expect in your inhale, a new vibration, new possibilities of existence. This depicts that new possibility. You see the emanation coming from a hexagon shape, creating a green image. Base of it with the foundation is diamond. The emanation of the diamond is you see, this is one person. This is where feminine and masculine fades.
Yeah.
And then the center, if you look at the shapes, you see they're circle. They're like as though it looks like a brand. Around it, there's a circle and there's a triangle. All of that is because the shapes are being redeemed as well. Once you are a carbonic illumination, once you're a diamond biovehicle, then the world is resolved. There is no more yin and yang. Everything is meshed. Everything is just non-separation. And this is how you can exist, even though you're going to be walking on the matrix, because you can't escape the matrix, because you're too tangled with your past karma as well as the futures of tomorrow that needs resolve with your entanglement. So therefore, you're still going to be walking on the matrix. But the experience that you're being offered to die while you're in the matrix is becoming available to you. You are just becoming a dying force.
That's right. And much like, in my rock hound way, I'll give the example. I'm holding a matrix in my hand right now. It looks pretty dumpy, right? It's a rock, pretty plain, some limestone, nothing crazy. Inside that matrix is an incredible world of crystalline delight. And purity and hexagonal organization.
You got it.
So out of the matrix comes the crystal. The carbon and that lump of coal that is being held by the image is no different than the diamond. The only difference is time and pressure. That's it. Time and pressure takes that exact same matrix of carbon and compresses it, makes it tighter and stronger. That's it.
That's it. And when it comes to spirituality,
and that's because it's exhaled the space. inside of that matrix and made it tighter and tighter to purify it.
And one way to look at it, Chris, is that when you are connecting to timelessness, because, you know, to bring about diamond, you're right, you need pressure and time, and time is an illusion, and pressure is also. So when you're talking about spirituality, when you're talking about beyond the matrix, how does diamond come about? It comes about by virtue of waking up. No time, no pressure, just wake the heck up and then breathe out. So it's the wakefulness that turns your coal into diamond, the same moment. So if you're, let's say, halfway out breathing and you were worried about your stress and suddenly you remember, oh, my God, y'all said connect your immovable peace. Well, right there, do it. Right there, do it. You can do it.
Yeah.
You're never going to be doing, you know, because you're connecting to timelessness, it's never too late to connect to that immovable peace during your exhale.
Yep. Yeah. And that idea of, once again, abiding.
Indeed.
Is where you get that immobility.
Indeed.
Because you can, I guess you could blow up a mountain, you could dig your way through it, you know, but that's going to take a lot of effort and everything else. You could also just abide with the mountain and enjoy a nice view, you know.
Thank you.
And that's just it. We as a society, as a humanity, especially here in the West, y'all, we don't know how to stop. Even myself, like I've got therapy here in just a little while, whenever we're done. And that is one of the things I'm working on with my therapist is the fact of I busy my mind with projects so that I don't think about things that are worrying me. Because when my hand is busy and doing something and wiring something and making it, I'm not thinking about those other things, you know.
Good job.
But that's an avoidance. That's not a dealing with the situation. That's not an emotionally good way of doing things. I need to abide.
Yes,
I need to abide. I need the dude abides. You know, and that's a great way to live. That's a great way to look at it in the parlance of our time, so to speak. Is I don't know if you're familiar with the movie The Big Lebowski, but,
not yet, but no.
It's a great movie. You should watch it because his character's name is the dude, and that is one of the things he says is that the dude abides. The dude abides,
right.
You know, and that's just it. It's like we all need to learn to abide and just be. The is of isness is such a beautiful thing and such a great concept. And I'm so glad that that you used this term for me this morning. It was really, really something that I needed to hear. And when you said it, it was like somebody hit my head like a gong. I felt it resonate through me, y'all. The idea of isness. You know, this idea is so great. I cannot wait to have you on again and again and again to see how this concept develops and moves into the world as not only you, but I help exhale it. And that is what I don't think everybody realizes, y'all, is that as soon as you accept and begin exhaling in this way, you are now changing the air and the vibration around you that other people are taking in.
Yes.
Which makes it easier for them to abide.
Yeah. And, you know,
and to exhale.
Yeah. And, you know, Chris, I'm so glad you mentioned that because it connected me to this, to express this. You know, the more I'm able to connect to the immovable peace during my exhale, the more the consciousness of every soul, you included, imports itself into me, because every one of us is desperate for that expression of abiding peace, a peace to abide by. Within me, within you, within every person, within every heart, there is that longing for somebody, for God's sake, breathe out of this human frequency, breathe out without that. And when you do that, that longing in every one of us will be tickled.
Mm.
So, and then the reciprocity beyond the limitation of the mind will flow, just like energy flow. You know, Chris, you and I agree, everything is vibration. And if everything is vibration, then we can simply know that in that exhale that we come, there is a vibration. That's not right. Only that, we can come to notice that in every vibration, there is a creation awaiting to happen. So once you recognize that you are, everyone is a creator,
yeah,
then your mind can be very easily submissive to abide by that peace. Trust me.
Well, and just the fact of by all ninth grade science, y'all, you are in Dubai right now. I am in Cedar Park, Texas, just north of Austin. We are actively sharing the same space atomically.
Yeah.
We're sharing an electron shell. Our electrons are commingling right now. That is how far out your electron shell goes.
And not only that, we're holding a space. And in that space,
we are abiding in the same space.
You got it. And the listeners are being, yeah, it's beautiful. It's this is how we hold space. This is how we hold space. And when you hold space, you are accessing timelessness.
Yeah.
So that's all.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Y'all, once again, this is, it was such an amazing moment meeting you and sharing time with you in Charlottesville, talking about this concept. It is something that I have talked about with people for years and years. The idea that we are all connected. It's all vibration. It's just one big web. You're a dewdrop on a spider web, man. And we're all vibrating at that frequency that the spider's walking, you know?
Indeed. And
it's a beautiful, beautiful philosophy of life and philosophy of the universe that you are distilling down for people. Now you're actively doing a pretty exclusive event with this coming up in Barcelona in November, correct? Let's hear a little bit the Carbonic Illumination event.
Yes, the Carbonic Illumination event is our first event that are being held, and it ended up turning into a very limited, it's in Barcelona, it's going to be limited seating, and it's going to be interactive. It's going to be basically breath work and awareness. And it's going to be for teachers and instructors at this point. And we are looking for ambassadors, carbonic ambassadors, so to speak, so that in your local area, you can basically be an ambassador to this carbonic illumination, helping this connectivity to the out-breath. So yeah, it's a happening place. We're working with a lot of people in the field of science have taken an interest to ask questions.
Yeah.
And at the end, I tell them at the beginning, I should say, I say that there's nothing scientific about this. There's nothing that I can impress you by giving you data analysis. I'm not a scientist, but I do want to simply point out that science also comes from that same creativity that we are talking about. So allow yourself to go beyond that science. It's okay if it's not scientific. Science is not the end of it. Science is only another thing that we have to let go in order to understand.
I wouldn't say that there's no science there, y'all. Because once again, as you are exhaling the carbon dioxide from your body, it is also taking with it decaying carbon from your body, things like that.
Indeed.
And once again, the Nobel Prize this last year for physics went to quantum entanglement. The fact that two particles, despite distance, can influence each other. Yeah. So, exhaling my carbon dioxide, I am still entangled with that carbon dioxide, no matter where it goes in the universe.
Scientific.
That's scientific.
And that's very scientific. I agree with that. Yeah. What I mean by that, it's quite scientific. But what I mean by that, the scientific or lack thereof is not going to be a limitation.
No.
The science is not going to limit you to connecting to that spiritual or that mystical connection of oneness that you are already.
Well,
so if I'm not scientific about it, I'm not hesitant about it, is all I'm saying.
Oh, sure. And the other beautiful thing that I love, Yah, is that this is not intended as a replacement for any religious belief. This is not intended as a replacement for any spiritual belief. This is not intended as a replacement for yoga. Intended as an accessory. Intended as a tool in the toolkit to enhance your religion, your spirituality, your yogic practice, what have you.
Indeed.
Because it is your connection and you're realizing your connection of the world around you. And once you realize that, then your consent as to what you send into that system changes.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure. Yeah, and you know, and for some of your listeners who perhaps are scientists, just so that I, eventually it will be a common thing where science will catch up to spirituality, because spirituality is creativity. Creativity is what science comes from. So ultimately science will catch up and be less sensitive to art and to these beyond, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, man. Thanks so much for coming on again. I appreciate it. I want to have you on again and again and again to talk about this stuff. Let everybody know where they can go to learn more about Carbonic Certainty, where they can go to contact you if they would like you to speak, appear on a show, to come talk to their yoga group via Zoom, what have you.
Indeed. First of all, I want to thank you, Chris, for having me over now.
Anytime
twice.
And always.
And I want to thank you as a collective consciousness for you to invite guests and to allow people to tune in to this idea of new possibilities in whatever way tangible that comes your way. And to me, I'm part of that consciousness that somehow was led into being a guest in your show, meaning your consciousness has become a collective consciousness, has guided me into finding you and be expression. So
I've learned to follow that little kite string that tugs my belly button, bud. Whenever I feel the tingle, I follow it. And I definitely felt the tingle when I talked to you in the hallway.
I really appreciated that. Now, so the people wanting to learn more information, the best way, the website is now up and running since last week. It is CCertainty or CarbonCertainty.com. Either one will lead you to that. So certainty with double C .com. And the other way to, for now, you can directly also direct message me on my cell phone. I will provide that. Ooh. It's there, 703-909-3793. I would be delighted to receive texts for inquiries about this carbonic illumination. Yeah.
It is an incredible concept, y'all. I am an absolute fan of it. I think it is amazing. I cannot wait to hear. We've got to have you back on after your event to hear how that went, all that kind of good stuff, because it's a great idea. I love it. And I think it's something that our world needs. I know it's something I need to learn to just abide and enjoy my isness. So, please hold the line while we close things out with our audience real quick, y'all.
Sure. And if I may just finish up by reading that quote I sent you, carbonic awareness.
Yes.
Would that be okay?
Please.
All right. So the carbonic awareness quote, I leave the audience with this quote. Carbonic awareness allows a state of wakefulness toroidal, like, did I say it right? Toroidal and vortices energy movements and momentums. So once again, carbonic awareness allows a state of wakefulness, allows you to be wakeful, awake to what? To certain energies. What kind of energies? Energies that are in the movement in a toroid shape from your heart, because heart creates a torus shape, and the vortices is the vortex force going up. So when you're awake to those notions, those energy movements, and they're all informatically emanating as photons destined to fuse into a sleep mode as time experience of the observer. In other words, you can be a time experience, you can be a time vessel on the time, passing time. However, you are able to informatically receive and experience the emanation of those photons coming from that toroid and vortex, waiting to be reduced to a time experience for the observer. So to be a carbonic illumination allows you to be wakeful to that torus and that vortex outside of your physical limitation. I just wanted to leave your audience with that quote. Thank you very much, Chris.
Absolutely, Yah. Thank you so much. I greatly appreciate it. Once again, hold the line while we close things out. While you are online checking out all of the amazing work of Yah Nasari and Carbonic Certainty over at ccertainty.com. Everybody, make sure to stop on by the Curious Realm. Curious Realm podcast is where you can find all the episodes. That's where you can like, follow, subscribe. That's where you can share the show with your friends. Tons of places there to follow us. Also, make sure to visit curiousrealm.com/video. That is where you can go to find all of the guest videos. All of their YouTube channels are embedded there, as well as our YouTube channel. Once again, make sure to feel free to follow, subscribe, share it with everybody, folks. Thank you so much for keeping yourselves open-minded, everybody. Keeping yourselves open-hearted. We will be right back after this commercial break with our next guest. Stay tuned. Right after this, everybody. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back from that commercial break. Thank you so much to our new friend, Yah Nasari, there with Carbonic Certainty. That is an amazing concept, the idea of changing the vibration in the world around you with your actual fixed frequency from the carbon dioxide that you are breathing. Remarkable idea, marrying quantum mechanics and quantum science with vibrations, things like that. In this segment, everybody, we will be welcoming back our good friend, Craig Woolheater. Craig Woolheater is one of the co-founders of Crypto Mundo. He is the founder of the Texas Bigfoot Museum. He is also the founder of the Feast of the Texas Bigfoot Conference, as well as the Texas UFO Con, all kinds of a Falk Monster Festival, all kinds of things. Welcome back to the show, Craig. How are you doing?
Oh, good, Chris. How are you?
Doing great, man. Doing great. Always love having you on the show, talking cryptozoology, and especially community. You are really, at least what I would consider, one of the many progenitors of community and conferences when it comes to such things. The Texas Bigfoot Conference has been rolling strong for, is it over 20 years now, Craig?
Yes, sir. First one was in, was just over 22 years ago, as a matter of fact.
Wow. Yeah. Like right up against 9/11 and everything else. And it's always a great time. I've had fun out there the last few times I have been. It's an awesome family event. What was it that first brought you into the world of cryptid research and just into the world of cryptozoology, Craig? Because it is strange place to just hop both feet into.
Well, sure. I was interested as a child. We had back in the late 60s, the summer of 1969, other than a song sung by Brian Adams, it was a time of, you know, back in the day with lots of local monsters all over the place. We had a monster that wasn't far from where I lived that was called the Lake Worth Monster that was terrorizing the Lake Worth area, which was, you know, 20 minutes or so from downtown Fort Worth back in the day. Was seen by hundreds of people that summer, including law enforcement personnel, and received a lot of publicity and a lot of people out there looking for it. It was, you know, basically a lover's lane area back then in the 60s. It's now a nature center and refuge run by the city of Fort Worth. And as a matter of fact, I've been helping them organize an event there, the Lake Worth Monster Bash, since 2009.
Awesome.
That the coming up is should be October of next year.
Oh, awesome.
2024.
Awesome.
For the Lake Worth Monster Bash.
Yeah, and I mean, we were actively just right in that backyard, yourself, myself, for the Dogman Cryptid Conference.
Yes, sir.
We were there in White Settlement, so we were
away. Well, yeah, we were, as a matter of fact, coming from east, heading that way, you know, crossed over Lake Worth to get to White Settlement. So, you know, I always joke that
the goat man.
That's right. I always joke that when you cross the bridge there, you gotta keep an eye out for the Lake Worth monster, see if he's still around.
Well, and you know, that was a very interesting case that went on for quite a while, and one of the only real mass sightings in the world of cryptozoology to happen, where it wasn't like, oh, here's 2-3 people. Like, there was an instance where there was a crowd of like 20-30 people that saw this thing throw a tire over their heads.
Right. Over the course of that summer of 1969, which, you know, the first reported sighting was on July 10th, which was, you know, 11 days before we landed on the moon, or 10 days before we landed on the moon. So, I mean, it was on the front page of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram back then, like I said, just days before man first landed on the moon. And my grandparents lived in Fort Worth and had a cabin cruiser boat out on the lake just north of Lake Worth, called Eagle Mountain Lake, that was separated by a dam. And spent a lot of time out there in the summers on the boat, and, you know, thoughts of, you know, the Lake Worth monster creeping up, you know, in my young head.
Active imagination.
Oh yeah, and that was
Lake
you know
Worth
that's
monster
where,
and Cheryl Teagues everywhere.
Oh yeah, Farrah Fawcett. Let's not forget her.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That was, you know, I was 9 years old that summer, and it was something that, you know, I was very interested in. I was interested in, you know, the strange and unusual as a kid, you know, UFOs and ghosts and dinosaurs and all kinds of stuff like that. And so that was something that was very interesting to me. I the next year I read a book by a gentleman who I also share a birthday with, John Keel. His birthday was March 25th, 1930. Mine is March 25th, 1960. But he wrote this book that was a precursor to the Mothman Prophecies. But this one was called Strange Creatures from Time and Space. And I got a copy of that book in 1970 when it came out. And then a couple of years later, actually saw the Legend of Boggy Creek in the theaters when it went to nationwide distribution in 1973. So saw that as a young teen and young impressionable teen. And so I was really interested in the subject of cryptozoology then. And, you know, I kind of, I was in Boy Scouts in my teens and, you know, so there was always that thought of, you know, going to run into, you know, the Boggy Creek monster or the Lake Worth monster or something, you know, camping out with the Boy Scouts. So it was something that, you know, was always thinking about. And then in 1994, I witnessed, you know, saw what I can only say was a Bigfoot, in central Louisiana, coming back to Dallas from New Orleans Memorial Day weekend, where we saw a large bipedal figure that was covered with hair about 20 feet off to the right of the road as we're driving down an unlit road out in the middle of nowhere, just swampy woods all around, and saw in my headlights this figure walking parallel to the road for, you know, 7-8 seconds, whatever, in my headlights, in the beam of my headlights. And so that brought that front and center then, from, you know, just being interested as a kid. So I started a Bigfoot research organization back in 1999 and started taking reports and getting people interested that wanted to go out with us to investigate. And so, you know, it just kind of went from there. Networked with a lot of people, went to a Bigfoot conference in Ohio, and decided, you know, there's not anything like this in Texas. You know, I could do something like this. And so
that's how
the Texas Bigfoot conference got started on September 15th, 2001, which, as you noted, was only 4 days after 9/11.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that is a long time to be putting on an event, Craig. That is a long time to be facilitating a community, which is what I love, because, you know, one of the things that we talk about, especially with experiencers, is the ease with which you can find other experiencers now.
Oh, you know, sure.
I've told people, maybe you saw a pull tab on a bulletin board in a library or something like that, or maybe you were on a bulletin board system. But like when Reverend Michael J.S. Carter had his experience in his room with ETs back in the late 70s, like it wasn't like you could hop on a chat thread and chat with other people that had an experience, you know, back when you started Texas Bigfoot Conference and even Crypto Mundo, that was the very infancy of the internet. Like email was just starting to take over people's lives in 1999, you know? So even the idea of a chat room was kind of new. Like I remember dialing into bulletin board systems manually in 1990s.
Right. You know, that's back when, like I said, my sighting happened actually on May 30th of 1994, and it was still a little over 3 years before I even had internet access. And, you know, back then there wasn't much of anything except, like you said, bulletin boards and forums and such to meet people. And, you know, that was very instrumental to me to, you know, meet a community of people out there. It was really the first time I really told my story about what I saw, because I just, after it happened, I didn't. And
why did you not tell your story, Craig?
I don't know. I mean, it was just something strange that happened to me and my girlfriend at the time that, you know, like I said, I had read all these accounts in John Keel's books and you know,
did you
Warren
and your girlfriend
Coleman's
talk
books.
About it?
We pulled over off the road about 20, 25, 30 minutes after it happened into the parking lot at a small church, and we talked about it for 10 or 15 minutes. And then we got back on the road. I had a friend that was actually with us but was asleep in the back seat of my vehicle, and she had to be at work that next morning, so we got back on the road. And once we got back on the road, we didn't talk about it. It was just something that happened.
Ever talk about it again?
No, not really. Not really until like I said, I got on the internet and met a community of people who were into this subject and started telling my story, and met a gentleman who wanted to start a Bigfoot research organization. And so he and I got together and, you know, built a website and started going out in the woods, and people wanted to get involved, and we started interviewing witnesses and such. And it just really took off. Like I said, I went to the Ohio Bigfoot Conference in 2000 up in Newcomerstown, Ohio, very small town. You know, that was actually, I think the 12th,
oh, wow.
the 12th annual event that, that Don Keating had been putting on. I believe his first one was in 1989. And, I went in 2000 and met people, networked. And like I've told people throughout the years, you know, the biggest part of being involved in this research and investigations and all of that is the camaraderie. I mean, yes. To me, there is nothing better than hanging out with a group of like-minded people with a common interest. I mean, some of my very best friends in this world are people that I've met, you know, dealing with Bigfoot.
Yeah, same. I mean, some of my best friends are people I've met having conversations on the show, folks like you, Craig. Where if I wasn't involved in these communities, if I wasn't actively having this conversation, I don't know. I mean, I knew of you because of Crypto Mundo, things like that.
Right.
But I don't know that we would have, unless I ever found out about Texas Bigfoot Conference or something in a casual conversation or Facebook ad, I don't know that we'd ever met, my friend. And that's kind of weak.
That's kind of scary, isn't it?
Well, I mean, sincerely, though, it is
sure.
community. And it's one of the things that I say regularly on this show, the things that I love about the cryptid community, as opposed to many others, is that there's the rift between physical and woo, of course.
Sure.
But even amongst that, there are conversations of commonality. There are more people openly swapping stories and sitting around till 1, 2 a.m. talking and hanging out like they haven't. It's like a family reunion. Anytime I go to any of the cryptid conferences, it is really interesting, as opposed to many of the others where, you know, you see pockets of people that know each other. Many of the speakers know each other, stuff like that. But the attendees, not necessarily, you know.
Right.
And the cryptid community is truly a community. The people go to the same conferences year after year. They look forward to seeing each other, all kinds of things. It is really a beautiful thing and an amazing thing that you have helped to facilitate with the Texas Bigfoot Conference, man.
Well, thank you, sir. I try to put on an entertaining event that people will enjoy and have a good time. Like I said, meet other people and make friends and kiss hands and shake babies. Oh, wait a minute. I got that wrong.
That's right.
kiss babies and shake hands.
Well, and that is one of the things that I love about your event, is that you do have the VIP dinner, things like that, the night before, where you can go and sit at a reserved table with your favorite crypto researcher, things like that.
Sure.
Ask him personal questions. And it's also an event where those people are not sequestered away from you, you know?
No, I've been to events where, you know, the speakers are,
yeah, they're in a green room,
sequestered in the green room or in the room at a hotel. And you know, they're there during the duration until it's time for them to come down and speak. And
yeah, they've got a couple hours at their signing table over the weekend or whatever.
But right.
Aside from that, yeah, they're high and dry.
Yeah, I like to, you know, the people that come like to be able to sit down and talk with these people, you know, that and can, you know, have met them many times at events and consider them friends as well. And you know, it's, you know, like you said, a sense of community, that it's not somebody that they just follow or see on a YouTube video or on TV, you know, that they can actually sit down with them and have a conversation.
And I think that that is the interesting thing, is that it is somebody that you might see on TV. You know, you'll see Ken Gerard, you'll see, you know, Lyle Blackburn, all kinds of people at your events.
Right.
But the thing that you get to see, as opposed to a lot of the, you know, conferences like AlienCon, things like that, where they're massive multi-day events, stuff like
that. Oh, sure.
Which are awesome and incredible, but you don't get the intimate time with the, right, the way that you do at an event like this, where it is a smaller event. And you do, mm-hmm, you do get to spend time with them. You do get to walk up to their table and have private conversations over the day.
Sure.
It's great to see that. And I know, every time I speak to any of the presenters, they love the fact that they get to sit there and actively talk with people about their research.
Right.
Yeah, it's always a fun event, man. Now, I want to revisit something, because it's a topic that we talk about regularly on the show. I myself have had my own paranormal experiences, a couple of them, a few of them with other people in the room, and one of them that was a big experience in my life. I remember seeing, I wouldn't call it a craft or anything like that. It had no distinguishable shape or lights. It was just a large black amorphous blob in the sky, blotting out stars as it went by. Me and a few friends witnessed it, things like that, but not until recently. And it was my best friend from high school, Billy Stewart.
Very cool.
And we hadn't really talked about it until about 6 months ago, man. It's been like 20 years, you know, like oh man, you remember that? Yeah. But we never sat down and like talked about the experience and how we processed it or anything like that until probably about 6 months ago. He wrote a little short story about it and texted me one day, and I was literally sharing the story the night before on air. And I was like, number one, I'm hurt that you weren't tuned in last night, because you would have heard me telling the story of the black blob.
Well, you should have had him on as a guest on that show.
We're working on bringing him on, talking about that. He's been on the show before in our previous incarnation, but it's one of those, it's interesting how experiences like this can actively lead to separation of people, Craig, to where even if it's a mutually accepted experience, it's interesting how sometimes it can drive wedges between people, family, friends, all kinds of things.
Sure.
That's why I was curious if you and your girlfriend ever processed it, talked about it again, just in a casual way after the experience. I'm always,
well, we, of course we did. We did after formed the, the Bigfoot Research Organization. We did get married, the year after we had the encounter, and we're married for 20 years. So it was discussed very much after the fact, but it wasn't until, I had really talked about it publicly, in the Bigfoot community.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. And how do you think your experience with that has changed you, Craig?
Well,
do you think it's changed you in any way?
Sure. I imagine that, I wouldn't have, taken this path that I have been on for 20 plus years if that event hadn't happened. I mean, like I said, I was interested as a kid, but it wasn't anything that was something that I thought about or talked about or was really interested till that event happened in May of 1994. It drove me to try to get answers. When I decided to form a Bigfoot research organization, which went live on June 26, 1999, I had been a Boy Scout as a teenager, but I wasn't a hunter, an outdoorsman, a tracker, a biologist, anything like that.
Yeah.
I was just somebody that you know, an extraordinary event happened in my life and drove me to seek answers. And, you know, even to this day, there are still more questions than answers. But
yeah,
it's something that I wanted to try to seek answers. And, you know, talked to many, many people over the years, numbering in the hundreds, who have, you know, claim to have had encounters with these creatures, with the unknown. And, you know, many people that I've talked to were just like myself, that had never been able to tell anybody about their encounter, or that when they had tried to tell somebody about their encounter, they were laughed at or made fun of, or told that they were crazy. And so they didn't. I mean, I've talked to grown men on the phone that broke down crying because they had never even been able to tell their wife, you know, because they just, you know, it was something they had held inside, and they were actually finally able to talk to somebody who had some experience in that matter, and listen to them with, you know, with a still skeptical mind, but let them tell their story uninterrupted, and you know, discussed it with them. And you know, I believe for a lot of them, it was a very cathartic experience to talk to somebody about it because they had never been able to.
Yeah, precisely, precisely. Being able to share something like that, because it is a, I was introduced to a really great concept at MUFONCon that I loved the terminology of ontological shock. The idea that an experience is a ground shaking experience to the paradigm in which you live, to the point where the paradigm which you live just it no longer exists or makes sense after your experience. And that is the experience that I've heard from so many people, especially with cryptid experiences, you know, experiences with Bigfoot, things like that. The fact of they'll never not believe, you know.
Right.
And even the concept of the true believer, Craig, like I'll never not believe that I had the religious experiences that I had. Like they were a case of ontological shock for me. From that point on, the world was never the same, and I couldn't look at the world the same way. Now, during your time investigating with the Bigfoot Research Organization that you helped start, what was some of the best evidence that you came across or that you collected?
Well, the best physical evidence that I ever encountered was shortly after the group started growing with exponentially with members, is on January 27th, 2001. We had gone out with about probably about 15 to 20 people, and had gone out to go scout an area where there had been reported sightings, and not that far from downtown Dallas. As a matter of fact, it was probably only about 45 minutes or so east of Dallas, an area between Terrell and Greenville, on the east side. I mean, I'm sorry, on the west side of Lake Tawakoni, that we had, it was Highway 34, that we pulled off on an old section before they had built the new highway through there between the two towns, and parked off on this old section of road that was no longer in use. And we hiked following this creek under the bridge of the new road a couple of miles in following the creek as it emptied into the lake. And as we were coming, you know, and it was, like I said, it was January 27th. It was about 39 degrees and it was drizzling. So it was fairly miserable out there. But on the way out, after we turned around and started hiking back to where our vehicles, we had encountered a large grassy meadow area, and the ground was getting rather soft with the moisture. And so we fanned out all the people that were walking back to, you know, just look for anything strange, unusual. And we actually found a trackway of three tracks that were a right, left, and a right. These were about 16 to 16 and a half inches.
Oh, wow.
With toe impressions. And they were from toe to heel, 48 inches and 52 inches.
Ooh.
So a pretty good step.
That's a big stride. You know? That's a big stride. And I mean, just to give you an idea, folks, I run about 6'1". I have a size 15 and a half shoe, which oddly enough is right at my shoe print sits right at 1 foot for a size 15 to 16 shoe. So, average stride is about 3 feet.
Or so.
Like that's a 16 inches is a, that is a Shaquille O'Neal, like size 22 size shoe. Like that is a, that is a huge foot.
And we had, have a member that was with us at that time that I believe was 6'2" and tried to replicate the step and could not do it.
Oh, a 48-inch stride? That's insane.
And you know, to stand and retain their balance and tried to step 48 to 52 inches and was unable to. So, unfortunately this was in the infancy of the organization. We did not come prepared. We did not have any plaster with us. One of the members, and I believe, you know, him, he still, comes around, Jerry Heston.
Oh yeah.
Actually took some photos of the impressions that we still have, but they were rather impressive. You know, first of all, most of the soil in Texas is not really conducive to finding good tracks.
Yeah.
Like I said, these indentations were 16 to 16 and a half inches with toe impressions. And, at that point, you know, it didn't seem so critical because it's like, well, you know, we found these tracks, you know, this afternoon looking around, you know, didn't feel that it was going to be so difficult to find good impressions in the ground. And come to the truth of the matter is that, you know, those were the best impressions or tracks that I ever found. I mean, they were, The thing, I don't believe they were hoaxed. Nobody knew where we were going other than the general area.
Yeah.
And that was just the people that were going.
Was it a generally traveled area, trailed, that kind of stuff? Or?
No. It was rough terrain, you know, walking along the creek area. So there was no trail or anything. Yeah. There was no paths or anything like that. And it was still a good ways off the road from where we had parked our cars, you know, probably a mile and a half or so. And so I'm fairly certain that it wasn't hoaxed. I mean, generally, tracks that I've examined that are on the side of the road, you know, obvious hoaxes. I mean, you know, a hoaxer, wants to,
attention.
Yeah. Wants their fake evidence to be found, to be seen, and to get a rise out of it. I mean, well,
hence,
you know,
my question, was it along like a state park walking path, you know, that kind of stuff where it's like, oh, a good 100 people a day walk past there. You know, it's, somebody's going to spot.
And like I said, it was just in a big open grassy meadow, and it wasn't the way we had walked in. We just found this area that was a nice grassy meadow. The soil was a little soft from the moisture. And so we just fanned out, you know, like maybe, you know, 5 to 10 feet apart as we all walked past.
Yeah.
And
search
so
and
we saw these. We saw these impressions in the soil. And, you know, like I said, I've never seen anything like that. Not saying, you know, a cast of an impression that I haven't, but I'm talking in the ground, fairly fresh, is, you know, from what I could ascertain. Like I said, I'm not a wildlife tracker or anything like that, but these prints look fairly fresh. I mean, the grass was pressed down in them, you know.
Yeah.
And the soil was moist. And, you know, I don't know why there was only three impressions. I don't know if, you know, like I said, our friend that was rather tall, you know, tried to make, you know, wasn't able to make any kind of an impression in that soil, and was not able to match the length of the steps. It was just pretty surreal to see something like that in
that
the ground with your own eyes, you know, that no telling how long ago that subject passed through there and left those impressions. I mean, I certainly wish that, you know, if nothing else, that we had somebody had sent to the hardware store. You know, it was on a Sunday afternoon, but, you know, to go pick up a bag of plaster, if nothing else, to mix up and pour in these, because they were just incredible.
Man. Yeah. And, you know, that really does speak to the fact, Craig, of, and, you know, no admonishment or anything like that, but it is one of those, it's a kick yourself in the butt moment.
Oh, you know?
Where it's like,
after that,
man,
we started.
Good luck ever leaving the house without it again. You know?
Yeah.
It's like,
after
that,
we started carrying, you know, kits, plaster and plastic
bags. Yeah, just
bags
buckets of
water.
Plaster mix in your trunk at all times, you know?
But we didn't have it that time, unfortunately.
Yeah. And, you know, moments like that as an investigator, Craig, they're life stealing, you know, they're affirming to what you are doing. How long did you, because you don't really do a whole lot of field work anymore, things like that, but how long were you out in the field with, it was Texas Bigfoot Research, right?
From 99 through about 2010.
Oh, wow.
I did other things that organized things. Yeah. Myself and Mike Assorti, we hosted an event actually up in Vermont at Lake Champlain. We hosted an event every summer called Champ Camp, where we would do experiments. You know, we used hydrophones and underwater cameras and such there at Button Bay, where there had been many sightings of the Champ Lake monster there, and you know, camp out there at the park, and you know, have boats and canoes and such, and go out into the water. And like I said, had hydrophones and underwater cameras and tried to gather evidence. And so, you know, I've done lots of things in different places than just here in Texas. You know, I used to get around to the Ohio Conference and, you know, camp out and up in the Pacific Northwest and stuff. But now basically I do get reports. I do have investigators that will look into these, go out and meet the witness at the scene. We had a really cool deal that happened, was it in 20, I'm trying to remember, 2019, 2020, where we got a report just 2 weeks before the event of somebody that had had activity out at their property, and they had a greasy face print on their glass kitchen door about 7 feet off the ground. And we actually went and got the took the glass out of the door, brought it to the conference. We had investigators that interviewed the witnesses at the scene, and that that actual glass, Cliff Berrickman was there at that event, and he and Shelley Covington, Montana, actually pulled DNA off of that Doug Hychek has. It's supposed to be waiting for testing. That's going to be used in the new Sasquatch Legend Meets Science Part 2 that he's working on. Actually not only pulled DNA off of it, but also actually pulled the face print off of the door itself.
Oh, epic.
And Cliff has that evidence, up at his museum up in Oregon.
Wow. Wow. And yeah,
that was something really cool. And that, like I said, that just happened right before the conference, and it was unscheduled. One of the guys that looked into it, Michael Waldy here, went and met the homeowners and actually pulled the glass out of their door and brought it to the event. We had it set up in a private room. We played the video of the interview of the homeowner and his family, and showed photographs of it. And then we just said, okay, folks, we actually have the glass here in this back room, and be able to file in table by table, one at a time, to go examine this, with Cliff and Shelley there and Michael, and, to shine the lights on it. And where, people could actually see this piece of evidence that was only less than 2 weeks old. And like I said, after the event, Cliff and Shelley pulled the, DNA samples off of it, and then actually pulled the print off of it.
But,
everybody that was there at the event actually got to file back there and see that. And everybody just thought it was the coolest thing they had ever seen.
Well, yeah, man. And I mean, of course, the work being done now with DNA being lifted from oil alleles, things like that, from handprints, skin prints. It's amazing to see where the technology is leading us. I've gone out on the limb on my show before and said I see in the next decade where we will have isolated genetic material. Easily from the new genetic methods we have, the new ways to examine old materials without deprecating them, things like that.
Sure. Technology, is exponentially increasing. And that's something that I've said from the very first is that I believe that these animals, which, I think they are a flesh and blood primate of some sort. And I believe that, technology is going to catch up and surpass them and will allow us to gain credible evidence of their existence.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, I've got the sightings map from the North American Wood Ape Conservancy up on screen right now. And when you look at just these sightings right here in the big thicket, Four Corners region of Texahoma, Louisiana, Texahoma-ana. If you start considering, number one, the mass number of sightings there, number two, the ability to now examine just the sighting reports, things like that with AI, and the speed with which you could do that. and the patterns that we may find, like even migratory patterns during seasons, things like that, stuff that would take long-reaching studies, Craig, that AI with sighting maps and things like this could go through and give you cycles of the sun and all kinds of things that could be correlated to how and when these sightings are occurring, you know, migratory patterns, you know, all kinds of things.
Yeah. One thing that people don't take into account of is that the four-state region right there where the four states converge, Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, and Louisiana, has more forested region than the whole state of Oregon, more than the size of the whole state of Oregon. I mean, there's an incredible amount of forest land in southeast Oklahoma, northeast Texas, you know, southwest Arkansas, and northwest Louisiana. I mean,
yeah,
the piney woods, the big thicket. I mean, there's there's incredible and amount of forest land.
And there are some areas, especially up there in that North Texas, Oklahoma region, and then in the big thicket, where you're hard pressed to see a good 30 feet in front of you. The forest is so dense. The fact of there being a rangeable area, food source, homing source, everything right there is not at all beyond possibility. Not at all.
Here in northeast Texas, we have annual rainfall approaching 60 inches a year.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just like any sort of wildlife. You have to have three things. You have to have a food source, you have to have a water source, and you have to have cover.
Yep.
And all those things are here in abundance.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. So once again, with modern techniques, things like that, I'm positive that within the next 10 years, we should be able to have some good genetic data on that has either been culled from AI or culled from the field. It's going to be remarkable to see where the technologies lead us in the world of investigating these things. So, before we let you go, my friend, let everybody know, because Jefferson, speaking of East Texas, things like that, I mean, I've got the proclamation right here. Not many people know, but Jefferson was actually proclaimed as the Bigfoot capital of Texas. My birthday. On my birthday.
How was it? February 12th?
Well, what I have here, the resolution that you sent me.
Okay, that's the county resolution that was just signed.
Oh.
Just last month, I believe, right? What's the...
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't remember if it was August or September.
No, August 28th, on my birthday.
August 28th?
Yep.
Okay, yeah, that I went to the, I had written up a resolution basically stating that Marion County, which Jefferson is the, is the...
seat.
What am I want to say? The seat of, yes, Jefferson is the seat of the county seat. Just direct your feet onto the county seat. That's probably before your time, isn't it?
don't age yourself now. Too late. Too late.
Well, I already did. I said I was 9 years old in 1969. So, anyway, I got by the county commissioner. I went before the county commissioner's court and presented this resolution that basically states that Marion County, the home of Jefferson, is a safe haven for Bigfoot. That is, you know, for people to not, you know, I guess you could even say fold, bend, spindle, or mutilate Bigfoot.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so. because I am trying to remember the guy. You may know who it was, Craig. He used to go on Coast to Coast many, many years ago. But he was here in the Texas Hill Country and actively, he was one of the people who was like, if you need a body, we'll bring you a body. Like, and he was doing like Bigfoot hunts where it was like a big game hunt for Bigfoot. Like, well, go out in the hill country and hunt down Bigfoot and try to kill one. So the fact that you guys are actively protecting Bigfoot and giving it a safe refuge, good on you, my friend.
Well, thank you, Chris. Thank you so much. From
as a Bigfooted hominid, I thank you for the preservation of my people.
Well, like I said, that's a good reason, as you started with, for people to come to the Texas Bigfoot Conference, which is 4 weeks from yesterday here in Jefferson. All the information, pictures, and their bios and such are out there on Facebook on the 2023 Texas Bigfoot Conference event page. That, you know, we got Maria Mayer from Expedition Bigfoot.
Yeah.
She is, been called the female Indiana Jones. We've got Daryl Collier and Matt Pruitt, the author of Phenomenal Sasquatch. We've got Sybilla Irwin. We've got Shelly Covington, Montana, and we've got Ashlyn Brown, who is a genetic scientist. Oh, wow. But we actually have, this may be something that's unheard of, but four of our six speakers at the conference are women.
Yeah.
So we are definitely equal opportunity conference. We welcome all. And like I said, it's here in the Bigfoot capital of Texas, and Marion County here is a safe haven for Bigfoot. But
the fact you had that done is awesome. That is awesome.
Well, thank you. I mean, you know, it's, anybody could do it. You just have to,
actually care enough to do it.
Exactly. Cause you can't just expect, your town or whatever, the mayor to write up a proclamation and state
it. Or for it even to be on his mind.
I authored both of those things and, presented them to the mayor and presented them to the county commissioners and the county judge. And, you have, the image there that is signed by the county judge.
Too cool.
That, to, approve this resolution, this county resolution. So,
wow.
It just adds to the whole atmosphere event that, you know, you're in the Bigfoot capital of Texas and you don't have to worry about, people coming here and shooting Bigfoot, hopefully.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. Because, it's one of those, like, I don't think it will take a body. I don't think it'll take a body. I think we're going to end up with hair samples, oil alleles more than anything, from handprints, right, things like that. So we're going to end up with some mitochondrial DNA from that kind of stuff that will really send us down the path that we're looking for. And this isn't even, a case of disclosure or anything. I guess for some people it is, Craig, much like, and I don't know. I don't much care for the whole woo term. I understand where it comes from, but, I'm very interested with the fact that you have a para Bigfoot researcher there this year. I think that's awesome. Because I do think that there is some interesting ties there, that go together. And, the fact that UFO UAP has hit the news in the way that it has, I think has opened all these conversations in a whole new way, given witnesses an open door for a lot of conversation. And given us all a whole new realm of things to pause and question and really think about, and not, yes, not just in the, because there, it's interesting, the conspiratorials that are out there about Bigfoot and the fact that the federal government knows about it and they know about deaths from Bigfoot and national forests and how many of them there are. That very well could be. I don't know. I'm saying it as though it isn't. I find that a bit of a reach myself, but I'm not going to say it. In fact, it very well could be. But it's interesting to me to see all of these communities really coming together. Whereas many years ago, once again, you'd have been hard pressed to find another Bigfoot experiencer to sit and have a beverage with.
You know, if you got time, if you got a few minutes, I can discuss something that just happened.
Oh yeah, absolutely, man, go.
On Facebook, like I said, this is Marion. The next county over is Harrison County.
Yeah.
And the Harrison County Sheriff's Department, on their Facebook page every day lists, the incident reports that come in that they follow up on. And one of them was an incident report that somebody had called in and said that, in the next county over, that they had a game camera photo of what they could only, describe as a Bigfoot. And the sheriff's department posted that on their Facebook page. And this happened on, I believe it was on a Sunday. Well, Monday morning, again, taking the initiative, I called the sheriff's department.
Mm-hmm.
And asked for some information about that, whether they could release that information to me or if I needed to file a Freedom of Information Act or whatever. And the lady at the sheriff's department, actually told me that they had passed that off to the local game warden that they took my number and said that they would ask him to give me a call.
Huh.
I think it was about 4:30 that afternoon, I got a phone call and it was the game warden. And the game warden called me and explained that, he had gone out and gotten a copy of the game camera photograph and found it interesting. He did say that he wasn't a biologist, but that he had forwarded that photograph onto Texas Parks and Wildlife biologist for their examination of the photo, and that we started talking and it was very close to Caddo Lake where this took place. About 10 miles as the crow flies. I looked it up on the map and measured it, only about 10 miles from Caddo Lake and Big Cypress Bayou that flows through Jefferson and into Caddo Lake.
Yep.
I got his name and his phone number and asked him about any other incidents that have been reported. And he said, yes, that they have over the years gotten reports in and that they don't, it's not termed Bigfoot or Sasquatch, that actually the local people that, always call it the Caddo creature, and that there had been other reports over the years Bigfoot type animal that people had witnessed out there. And so I haven't followed up with him. Like I said, he had told me that he had forwarded the photograph on. So I will.
Wow.
It's been maybe a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks.
Interesting.
Maybe tomorrow it'll be 2 weeks since I had spoken to him. And I need to follow up to see if he got any word back from the biologist on what they thought was in the picture. But like I said, he didn't offer any opinion as to what he thought it might be. And again, I haven't seen the photograph. I hope that I can get an opportunity to see it. I promised him,
to hear a game warden and Texas Parks and Wildlife official say, like, well, I don't know what it was. Right. Like they're pretty familiar with their wildlife, you know,
yeah.
Like that, that's kind of their gig.
Yeah.
So,
and so, like I said, I hope to get a follow up from him on it.
Yeah.
I promised him that I would, he would remain anonymous in any discussions I had about him. This is really, I posted an update on Facebook because I had shared the original incident report, but this is the first time I've talked publicly about it.
Well, I'm glad it was on here.
I guess you got the scoop.
I got the scoop.
But I'm hoping, like I said, I'm hoping to get a follow up soon.
Well, and one of the things that I have found very, very interesting over the last many years going out, specifically going out and doing all the conferences that I've been doing, Craig, and talking with people, meeting investigators, meeting people that do field investigations for groups of all kinds of things, be it paranormal and ghost to Bigfoot and cryptid to, you know, psychic, all kinds of things. I have met more former badge wearers in the last 2 years than I don't know where, you know, like I'm a fourth degree Knight of Columbus. I don't think I've met as many cops, you know?
A lot of law enforcement, a lot of ex-military.
Yeah. When you're talking UFO, UAP research, things like that. And it's interesting to hear how many of them come to it because like, hey man, There was a call I was called out to that I'll never be able to explain what that call was. And that's what brought me into this, you know?
I got a cool report that we got back years back that was reported to us. And we actually... were interviewed by the local newspaper about this report, and actually a photograph that somebody had taken down in the Houston area, and it was written up in the local paper, and some residents there, I believe it was in El Campo, had seen it in the newspaper. And they had had an incident where they said it appeared to be like a 6 foot tall spider monkey had jumped off the roof of their house and landed on their trailer, a boat trailer, and scampered off and, freaked them out. And they called it in to the local sheriff's office and reported it as a prowler, because they just figured if they told them what they saw that, you know, they'd be laughed at and nobody would come out. So a sheriff's deputy went out and actually spoke to them, looked around, and we got his information. I spoke to him, and while he had never seen anything out there, he said that he was going to keep his eyes out now because he worked the night shift, and didn't scoff at it, didn't make fun of it, didn't ridicule them, and, you know, told me that, you know, if he ever saw anything, he would let us know. We never heard back from him, but I believe that was probably because, you know, he either retired or, never witnessed anything, but, you know, took the subject very seriously.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And once again, the officers that I have met, I mean, people like Greg Lawson, you know, Martha Hazard Decker, stuff like that, like former murder investigators, man, like they saw bodies for a living. And this is the field of study that they have come to afterward. And it's great. I love it because they are bringing such an evidentiary knowledge, you know, such a means by which to process testimony from people. All kinds of things. Their meters are set to a totally different level than the average person or average researcher, you know? So it's great to see that. And I love to see their involvement in this community and their curiosity with it as well as people who investigated things professionally. It's fantastic. So, I'm sad I can't be there at this year's festival, man. It sounds like it's going to
be
awesome.
Missed, sir. You'll be missed.
Well, I will miss it most definitely. It is one of my favorite cons to go to every year. It's always, once again, a great community of people, but much more than that, the researchers and being able to sit and talk with them, like I said, in that intimate way, is just so fantastic. And good for you for assembling such an amazing range of speakers this year, man. That is incredible. So before we let you go, one last time, like, shameless self-promotion. Let everybody know where they can go to follow Texas Bigfoot Conference, where they can go to get their tickets, where they can go to buy their VIP tickets, which there is still a few available, I believe.
Yes, sir.
So let everybody know where they can go to get tickets, everything else, Craig.
Well, you can find that information on Facebook. There's a Facebook event page. There's also a Facebook page for Texas Bigfoot Research Center or the Texas Bigfoot Conference. But if you search for the 2023 Texas Bigfoot Conference, you can find all the information about the event. It is on October 20th through 22nd, which is incidentally the third weekend in October, and Jefferson is officially Texas Bigfoot Weekend here, as proclaimed by the mayor back in 2005.
That's right.
So all that information is there. You can see who the speakers are. Like I said, I named them earlier, but we've got some great speakers. We've got Maria Mayer from Expedition Bigfoot, who's a degreed scientist, a primatologist. Yeah. She has actually discovered a species of primates in Madagascar, the female Indiana Jones. She will be here. Like I said, a couple of guys from NAWAC that you mentioned, the North American Wood Ape Conservancy. We've got some scientists. We've got Tabilla Irwin, who's is a sketchist and does eyewitness sketches. We've got, like I said, a genetic scientist. So we've got a wide range of people and should have a good crowd, cool people to meet and greet, hang out, and chew the fat and shoot the breeze.
Heck yeah, man. Absolutely. Once again, always great talking with you. Always great to see the lineups that you put together. You really do put on some fantastic shows, my friend.
Well, thank you, Chris. It's much appreciated. And like I said, sorry we're not going to get to see you, but did see you at the Texas UFO Con last month, and then saw you at the Dogman Cryptid deal, and I'm sure we'll see you in Arkansas for the Monster Festival in April.
It is on my calendar right now. So, yeah, absolutely. I can't wait, man. Hold the line while we close things out real quick, and we'll chat. While you are online, checking out all the amazing work of Craig Woolheater and his organization of the event Texas Bigfoot Conference out in Jefferson, Texas, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. That is where you can like, follow, subscribe, share the show. CuriousRealm.com is the website. That is where you can find our store, CuriousRealm.com/store. That's where we have not only our swag, but all the books from our amazing guests are listed there. Just click the book cover. It'll take you right to it. And Amazon folks, thank you so much for tuning in as always. It is always great having conversations with you. It is always great growing as humanity with you guys. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And remember, stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault on our website, CuriousRealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app, available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.